place before it claimed me forever. I picked up the book in both hands and carried it into the cave. It was time to make a trade. With every step, the book was heavy in my hands. It didn't slow me down, though. Nothing could. Not now. Not until there were no more steps to take. The gates of the Far Keep rose before me, straight and tall. Now I understood why Xavier was so obsessed with gold. The gates were a filthy, blackish brown, but underneath I could see the gold fighting through. They rose in forbidding spires. They didn't seem to lead anywhere a person would want to go. They looked so evil. Xavier followed my eyes to the tips of the spires.
They are what they are. Power is neither good nor evil.
Maybe that's true, but this place is evil.
Ethan, you are a strong mortal. You have more life in you than any dead man I've met.
Somehow, that wasn't a comfort.
I cannot open the gates if you do not truly wish to go.
The words sounded ominous. I have to go. I have to get back to Lena and Amma and Link and my dad and Marion and Liv and everybody. I saw their faces, every one of them. I felt surrounded by them, by their spirits and by mine. I remembered what it was to live among them. My friends, I remembered what it was to live.
Lena, the girl with the golden curls?
Xavier sounded curious. There was no point trying to explain, not to him. I just nodded. It seemed easier.
And you love her?
He looked even more curious about that. Yes, there was no doubt. I love her beyond the universe and back. I love her from this world to the next. He blinked, expressionless.
Well, that's very serious.
I almost felt like smiling. Yeah, I tried to tell you. It's like that. He stared at me for a long moment, finally nodding.
All right. Follow me.
Then he disappeared up the dusty pathway in front of me. I followed him as the path twisted into an impossibly rocky staircase. We climbed until we reached a narrow cliff that dropped away into what seemed like oblivion. When I tried to look over the edge of the rock, all I could see were clouds and darkness. In front of me were the imposing black gates. I couldn't see anything beyond them, but I could hear terrible sounds, chains rattling, voices wailing and crying. It sounds like hell. He shook his head.
Not hell, only the Far Keep.
Xavier moved in front of me, blocking my path to the gates.
Are you sure you want to do this, dead man?
I nodded, keeping my eyes on his disfigured face.
Human boy, the one called Ethan. My friend.
His eyes went pale and glassy, as if he was going into some kind of trance. What is it, Xavier? I was impatient, but more than that, I was terrified. And the longer we stood outside, listening to the terrible sounds of whatever was going on inside, the worse it seemed to get. I was afraid of losing my nerve, of giving up and turning back, of wasting everything Lena had gone through to get the Book of Moons to me. He ignored me.
You propose a trade, dead man. What do you offer me if I open the gates? How do you propose to pay your way for entrance into the Far Keep?
I just stood there. He opened one eye, hissing at me.
The book. Give me the book.
I gave it to him, but I couldn't move my hands away. It was like the book and I were one thing, yet somehow connected to Xavier as well. What the?
I accept this offering, and in return I open the gates of the Far Keep. Xavier's body went limp, and he collapsed in a heap around the book. Are you okay, Xavier? Shh. The sound coming from the heap of robes was the only thing that told me he was still alive. I heard another sound, like rocks falling or cars crashing, but really it was just the enormous gates opening. It seemed like they hadn't been opened in 1,000 years. I watched the black walls give way to the world inside. As a rush of relief and exhaustion and adrenaline made my heart race, one thought kept running through my mind. It has to be over soon. This had to be the hardest part. I paid the ferryman. I crossed the river. I got the book. I made the trade. I made it to the Far Keep. I'm almost home. I'm coming, El. I could picture her face, imagine seeing her and holding her in my arms again. It wouldn't be long. At least, that's what I thought as I walked through the gates. Chapter 31. Keepers of Secrets. I don't remember what I saw when I walked into the Far Keep. What I remember are the feelings, the pure terror, the way my eyes couldn't find anything, not one familiar thing to rest on, nothing they could understand. I was prepared in no way, by any world I'd ever encountered, for the one I was encountering now. This place was cold and evil, like Sauron's tower in The Lord of the Rings. I had that same feeling of being watched, the feeling that some sort of universal eye could see what I was seeing, could sense the innermost terrors of my heart and exploit them. As I stepped away from the gates, tall walls loomed on either side of me. They extended toward an overlook, where I could see the greater part of a city. It was as if I was looking into a valley from a high mountaintop. Beneath me, the city extended toward the horizon in a great recess of structures. As I looked more closely, I realized it didn't resemble a regular city. It was a labyrinth, a massive interlocking puzzle of paths carved from cut hedges. It threaded through the whole of the city between me and the golden building that rose steeply toward the horizon ahead. The building I needed to reach.
Have you come here to face the labyrinth? Are you here for the games?
I heard a voice behind me, and I turned to see an unnaturally pale man, like the keepers who had appeared in the Gatlin Library before Marion's trial. He had the opaque eyes and prismatic glasses I had come to associate with the Far Keep. Over his thin frame hung a black robe like the ones the council members had worn when they sentenced Marion, or whatever they had planned to do before Macon, John, and Liv stopped them. Those were the bravest people I knew. I couldn't let them down now. Not Lena. Not any of them. I'm here for the library, I answered. Can you show me the way?
That's what I said. The games.
He pointed to a braid of gold rope around his shoulder.
I'm an officer. I'm here to make sure all who enter the keep find their way.
Huh?
You want to gain entrance to the Great Keep. Is that your desire?
That's right.
Then you're here for the games.
The pale man pointed at the overgrown green maze below us.
If you survive the labyrinth, you'll end up there.
He moved his finger until he was pointing at the gold towers.
The Great Keep.
I didn't want to find my way through a labyrinth. Everything about the other world felt like one gigantic maze, and all I wanted to do was find my way out. I don't think you understand. Isn't there some kind of door? A place where I can walk inside without having to play any games? I didn't have time for this. I needed to find the Caster Chronicles and get out. Get home. Come on.
He slapped his hand against my arm, and I struggled to stay standing. The man was incredibly strong. Link and John strong.
It would be too easy if you could walk into the Great Keep. What would be the point of that?
I tried to hide my frustration. I don't know. How about to get inside? He frowned.
Where have you come from?
The other world.
Dead man, listen well. The Great Keep is not like the other world. The Great Keep has many names. To the Norse, it is Valhalla, Hall of the Lords. To the Greeks, it is Olympus. There are as many names as there are men who would speak them.
Okay, I'm down with all that. I just want to find my way inside this one library. If I could just find someone to talk to...
There is but one way into the Great Keep, he said. The warrior's way.
I sighed. So there's no other way, like a doorway? Maybe even a warrior's doorway? He shook his head.
There are no doors to the Great Keep.
Of course there weren't. Yeah? What about a stairway? I asked. The pale man shook his head again. Or maybe an alley? He was finished with this conversation.
There is only one way in, an honorable death. And there is only one way out.
You mean I can be more dead than this? He smiled politely. I tried again. What's that, exactly? An honorable death?
You face the labyrinth. It does what it will with you. You accept your fate.
And what's the one way out? He shrugged.
No one leaves unless we choose to let them leave.
Great. Thanks, I guess. What else was there to say?
Good luck, dead man. May you fight in peace.
I nodded. Yeah, sure, I hope so. The strange keeper, if that's what he was, went back to guarding his post. I stared down at the massive labyrinth, wondering once again what I'd gotten myself into and how I could possibly get myself out. They shouldn't call death passing on. They should call it leveling up. Because the game only got harder once I lost. And I was more than a little worried. It had only just begun. I couldn't put it off any longer. The only way to get through this whole labyrinth thing, like most other crappy things, was to just get through it. I would have to find a path the hard way, the warrior's way, or whatever, and fight in peace? What was that about? My guard was up as I stumbled my way down a staircase cut out of rock. I moved deeper into the valley below, and the stairs widened into layers of steep cliffs, where green moss grew between the rocks and ivy clung to the walls. When I reached the base of the walled stairwell, I found myself in an immense garden. Not just a garden like the ones folks in Gatlin grew their tomatoes in, out behind their swamp coolers. A garden in the sense of the Garden of Eden, and not Gardens of Eden, the florist over on Main Street. It looked like a dream, because the colors were all wrong. They were too bright, and there were too many of them. As I moved closer, I realized where I was. The labyrinth. Rows of hedges tangled with so many flowering bushes that they made the gardens of Ravenwood look small and shabby in comparison. The farther I walked, the less it seemed like walking and the more it felt like bushwhacking. I pulled branches out of my face and kicked my way through the waist-high brambles and brush. Root hog or die, that's what Amma would have said. Keep trying. It reminded me of the time I tried to walk home from Waiter's Creek when I was 9. I had been poking around in Amma's craft room, which wasn't a craft room at all. It was the room where she stored the supplies for her charms. She gave me a piece and a half of her mind, and I told her I was walking home. I can find my own way. That's what I told her. But I didn't find my way, or any way. Instead, I wandered deeper and deeper into the swamplands, spooked by the sound of gators' tails thrashing in the water. I didn't know Amma was following me, until I dropped to my knees and started to cry. She stepped out into the moonlight, hands on her hips. "Guess you should have dropped some breadcrumbs if you were planning to run off." She didn't say anything else, just held out her hand. "I would have found my way back," I'd said. She nodded. "I don't doubt it for a minute, Ethan Waite." But now, yanking dirt and thorns out of my face, I didn't have Amma to come find me. This was something I had to do on my own. Like plowing the Lilum's field and bringing the water back to Gatlin, or taking a dive off the Somerville Water Tower. It didn't take long for me to figure out that I was pretty much in the same boat I'd been in that day in the swamp when I was 9. I was walking down the same pathways over and over, unless some other guy was wearing the same size Converse as me. I might as well be lost on the way home from Waiter's Creek. I tried to think. A maze is just a big puzzle. I was going about this wrong. I needed to mark the pathways I had already taken. I needed some of Amma's breadcrumbs. I stripped the nearest bush of its leaves, stuffing them in my pockets. I reached out my right hand until it touched the wall of bushes, and I started walking. I kept my right hand on the wall of the maze and used my left to drop the waxy leaves every few feet. It was like a giant corn maze. Keep the same hand on the stalks until you dead end, then switch hands and go the other way. Anyone who's ever been stuck in a corn maze can tell you that. I followed the path to the right until it dead-ended. Then I switched hands and breadcrumbs. This time, I reached out with my left hand, and I used stones instead of leaves. After what felt like hours of winding my way through this particular puzzle, hitting one dead end after another and stepping over the same rocks and leaves I had used to mark my tracks, I finally reached the very center of the maze, the place where all pathways came to an end. Only the center wasn't an exit. It was a pit with what looked like enormous mud walls. As thick rolls of white fog spread toward me, I was forced to confront the truth. The labyrinth wasn't a labyrinth at all. It was a dead end. Beyond the fog and dirt, there was nothing but the impenetrable brush. Keep moving. Keep your bearings. I walked forward, kicking waves in the dense mist that clung to the ground around me. Just as I made some progress, my foot hit something long and hard, maybe a stick or a pipe. I tried to navigate more carefully, but the fog made it hard to see. It was like looking through glasses smeared with Vaseline. As I moved closer to the center, the white mist began to clear, and I tripped again. This time I could see what was in the way. It wasn't a pipe or a stick. It was a human bone. Long and thin, it must have been a leg bone, or maybe an arm. Holy crap! I yanked on it, and it pulled free, sending a human skull rolling toward my feet. The dirt around me was piled high with bones, as long and bare as the one I was holding in my hand. I let the bone drop and backed away, stumbling over what I thought was a rock, but it was another skull. The faster I ran, the more I tripped, twisting my ankle in the loops of an old hip bone, catching my chucks on a piece of spine. Am I dreaming? On top of that, I had an overpowering sense of déjà vu, the feeling that I was running toward a place I'd been before. Which didn't make sense because I had no experience with pits or bones or wandering around being dead until now. Still, it felt like I'd been here, like I'd always been here, and I couldn't get far enough away, like every path I'd ever taken was here in this maze. no way out but through it. I had to keep moving. I had to face this place, this pit full of bones, wherever it was leading me, or to who. Then a dark shadow emerged, and I knew I wasn't alone. Across the clearing, there was a person sitting on what looked like a box, perched on a gruesome hill of human remains. No, it was a chair. I could see the back rising higher than the rest, the arms jutting wider. It was a throne. The figure laughed with impossible confidence as the fog parted to reveal the corpse-ridden waste of the uneven battleground. It didn't matter to the person on the throne. To her. Because as the fog rolled back to reveal the center of the pit, I knew immediately who was sitting tall on a hideous throne of bones. Back made of broken backs, arms made of broken arms, feet made of broken feet. The queen of the dead and the damned. Laughing so hard, her black curls slithered through the air like the snakes on Obadiah's hand. My worst nightmare. Seraphine Duquesne. Chapter 32. Throne of Bones. Her dark cloak flapped in the wind like a shadow. The mist swirled around her black buckled boots, disappearing into the darkness as if she could draw it to her. Maybe she could. After all, she was a cataclyst, the most powerful caster in two universes. Or the second most powerful. Seraphine pushed back her cloak, letting it fall off her shoulders, around her long black curls. My skin went cold. Karma's a bitch. Wouldn't you say, mortal boy? She called across the pit, her voice confident and strong, full of energy and evil. She stretched luxuriously, clasping the arms of the chair in her own bony claws. I wouldn't say anything, Seraphine. Not to you. I tried to keep my voice even. I hadn't wanted to see her in one lifetime, let alone two. Seraphine beckoned with one curving finger. Is that why you're hiding? Or are you still afraid of me? I took a step closer. I'm not afraid of you. She cocked her head. I don't know that I blame you. After all, I did kill you. A knife to the chest in warm, mortal blood. Hard to remember back that far. I guess you weren't that memorable. I folded my arms stubbornly, trying to hold my ground. It was no use. She rolled a ball of mist toward me, and it wrapped around me, closing the gap between us. I felt myself moving forward, powerless, as if she was dragging me by a leash. So she still had her powers, even here. Good to know. I stumbled over the ridge of an inhuman skeleton, something twice as big as me, with twice as many arms and legs. I swallowed. More powerful creatures than a guy from Gatlin County had met their fates here. I hoped she wasn't the reason why. What are you doing here, Seraphine? I tried not to sound as intimidated as I was. I dug my feet into the dirt. Seraphine leaned back in her throne of bones, examining the nails on one of her claws. Me? Lately, I've spent most of my time being dead, like you. Oh, wait. You were there. You watched when my daughter let me burn to death. A real charmer, that one. Teenagers. What are you going to do? Seraphine had no right to mention Lena. She'd surrendered that right when she walked away from a burning house with her baby daughter inside. When she tried to kill Lena like she'd killed Lena's father, and me. I wanted to throw myself at her, but every instinct I had left told me to stay back. You're nothing, Seraphine. You're a ghost. She smiled when I said the word ghost, biting the tip of one of her long black nails. Something we have in common now. We don't have anything in common. I could feel my hands clenching into fists. You make me sick. Why don't you get out of my sight? I didn't know what I was saying. I wasn't in any position to be ordering her around. I didn't have a weapon, no possible means of attack, no way past her. My mind raced, but I couldn't find an advantage. And you couldn't let Seraphine get the upper hand. Kill or be killed, that was her style, even when it seemed like we should have moved past something as mortal as death. Her mouth curled into a snarl. Your sight? She laughed, a cold sound that rippled down my spine. Maybe your girlfriend should have thought about that before she killed me. She's the reason I'm here. If it weren't for that ungrateful little witch, I would still be in the mortal world instead of stuck in the dark, battling the ghosts of lost and pathetic mortal boys. She was close enough now that I could see her face. She didn't look too good, even for Seraphine. Her dress was ragged and black, the bodice charred into tattered pieces. Her face was smudged with soot, and her hair smelled like smoke. Seraphine turned toward me, her eyes glowing and white, milky with an opaque light I had never seen before. Seraphine? I took a step back, just as she struck me with a bolt of electricity, the smell of burnt flesh traveling faster than her body possibly could. I heard a psychotic scream, saw her face contorted into an inhuman death mask. Sharp teeth seemed to match the dagger she held in her hand, only inches from my throat. I winced, pulling back from the blade, but I knew it was too late. I wasn't going to make it. Lena! Seraphine stopped short, as if smashed backward by an invisible current, her arms stretched toward me, her blade shaking with anger. Something was wrong with her. I heard the sound of chains as she fell, stumbling back toward her throne. She dropped the blade, and her long skirt kicked open, and I saw the manacles around her ankles, the chains holding her to the ground and pinning her to the throne. She wasn't the queen of the underworld. She was an angry dog trapped in a kennel. Seraphine screamed, beating her fists against the bones. I moved to the side, but she didn't even look at me. Now I understood. I picked up a bone and tossed it at her. She didn't react until it hit the throne, falling harmlessly into the pile of debris at her feet. She spit at me, shaking with rage. Fool. But I knew the truth. Her white eyes saw nothing. Her pupils were fixed. She was blind. Maybe it was from the fire that had killed her in the mortal world. It all came flooding back to me, the terrible end of her terrible life. She was as damaged here as she was when she burned to death. But that wasn't all. Something else had happened. Even the fire couldn't explain the chains. What happened to your eyes? I watched her recoil when I said it. Seraphine wasn't one to show weakness. She was better at finding and exploiting it. My new look, old blind woman, like the Fates or the Furies. What do you think? Her lips curved over her teeth into a growl. It was impossible to feel sorry for Seraphine. So I didn't. Still, she seemed bitter and broken. The leash is a nice touch, I said. She laughed, but it was more like the hiss of an animal. She had become something that didn't resemble a dark caster. Not anymore. She was a creature, maybe even more of one than Xavier or the Rivermaster. She was losing it, whatever part of our world she'd known. I tried again. What happened to your sight? Was it the fire? Her white eyes burned as she answered. The Far Keep wanted to have their fun with me. Angelus is a sadistic pig. He thought they would even the odds by forcing me to battle without being able to see my opponents. He wanted me to know how it would feel to be powerless. She sighed, picking at a bone. Not that it slowed me down yet. I didn't think it had. I looked at the circus of bones surrounding her, the bloodstains in the dirt at her feet. Who cares? Why fight? You're dead. I'm dead. What do we even have left to fight about? Tell this Angelus guy to go jump off a... water tower? She laughed. But I had a point, if you thought about it. It was starting to feel like those old Terminator movies between us. If I killed her now, I could imagine her skeleton dragging itself across this pit with glowing red eyes until it could kill me 1,000 more times. She stopped laughing. Why are you here? Think about it, Ethan. She lifted her hand, and I felt my throat beginning to close. I gasped for air. I tried to back away, but it was pointless. Even with her dog chain, she still had enough power to make my not-quite-a-life miserable.
I'm trying to get into the Great Keep, I choked.
I tried to inhale, but I couldn't get a real breath. Am I even breathing, or am I only imagining it? Like she said herself, she'd already killed me once. What was left?
I just want to take my page. You think I want to be stuck here forever, wandering through a maze of bones?
You'll never get past Angelus. He'd die before he'd let you near the Castor Chronicles.
She smiled, twisting her fingers, and I gasped again. Now it felt like she had a hand around my lungs.
Then I'll kill him.
I grabbed at my neck with both hands. My face felt like it was on fire.
The keepers already know you're here. They sent an officer to lead you into the labyrinth. They didn't want to miss out on the fun.
Seraphine twisted around at the mention of the keepers, as if she was looking over her shoulder, which we both knew she wasn't. An old habit, I guess.
I still have to try. It's the only way I can get home.
To my daughter.
Seraphine rattled her chains, looking disgusted.
You never give up, do you?
No.
It's like a sickness.
She rose from her throne, crouching on her heels like an evil, overgrown little girl, dropping the hand that was choking me. I collapsed onto a heap of bones.
You really think you can hurt Angelus?
I can do anything if it will get me back to Lena. I looked straight into her sightless eyes. Like I said, I'll kill him. At least part of him is mortal. I can do it. I don't know why I said it that way. I guess I wanted her to know in case there was any small part of her that still cared about Lena. Any part of her that needed to hear I really would do anything under the sun to find a way back to her daughter. Which I would. For a second, Seraphine didn't move.
You actually believe that, don't you? It's charming, really. Shame you have to die again, mortal boy. You certainly amuse me.
Light flooded into the pit as if we really were two gladiators competing for our lives. I don't want to fight, not with you, Seraphine. She smiled darkly.
You really don't know how this works, do you? The loser faces eternal darkness. It's simple enough.
She sounded almost bored. There's something darker than this?
Much.
Please, I just need to get back to Lena, your daughter. I want to make her happy. I know that doesn't mean anything to you, and I know you've never wanted to make anyone happy but yourself. But it's the only thing I want.
I want something, too.
She twisted the fog around her in her hands until it wasn't fog at all, but something glowing and alive, a ball of fire. She stared right at me, even though I knew she couldn't see.
Kill Angelus.
Seraphine started to cast, but I couldn't hear what she was saying. Fire shot from the base of her throne, spreading in all directions. It moved closer and closer, turning from orange to blue and purple flames as it ignited bone after bone. I backed away from her. Something was wrong. The fire was growing, spreading faster than I could run. She wasn't trying to stop the flames. She was the one making them grow. "What are you doing?" I shouted. "Are you crazy?" She was in the very center of the flames. "It's a battle to the death. Absolute destruction. Only one of us can survive. And as much as I
hate you,
I hate Angelus more." Seraphine raised her arms over her head, and the fire grew as if she was pulling the flames up with her. "Make him pay." Her cloak caught fire, and her hair started burning. "You can't just give up," I shouted, but I didn't know if she could hear me. I couldn't see her anymore. I hurled myself into the fire without thinking, falling toward her through the flames. I wasn't sure I could stop, even if I wanted to, but I didn't want to. It was Seraphine or me, Lena or eternal darkness. It didn't matter. I wasn't going to sit there and watch anyone die chained like a dog. Not even Seraphine. It wasn't about her, it was about me. I reached for the manacles around her ankles, beating on the iron with the bone at the base of her throne. "We have to get out of here!" The fire had completely surrounded me when I heard the screaming. The sound tore across the barren dirt, rising into the air over the pit. It sounded like a wild animal dying. For a second, I thought I saw the distant golden spires of the Great Keep flicker at the sound of her voice through the flames. Seraphine's burning body arched back, writhing in pain, and started to crumble into tiny pieces of burnt skin and bone. There was nothing I could do as the flames consumed her. I wanted to close my eyes or turn away, but it seemed like someone should bear witness to her last moments. Maybe I just didn't want her to die alone. After a few minutes that felt more like hours, I watched as the last bits of the darkest caster in two worlds blew into cold, white ash. It was too late to get out. I felt the fire crawl up my arms. I was next. I tried to picture Lena one last time, but I couldn't even think. The pain was unbearable. I knew I was going to pass out. This was it. I closed my eyes. When I opened them again, the pit was gone, and I was standing in front of a quiet doorway in a still hallway in a building that looked like a castle. There was no pain, no Seraphine, no fire. Exhausted, I wiped the ash out of my eyes and sank into a ball at the foot of the wooden doors. It was over. There were no bones beneath my feet, only marble tiles. I tried to focus on the doors. They were so familiar. I'd seen all of this before. It was even more familiar than the feeling I had when I saw Seraphine coming toward me. Seraphine, where is she now? Where is her soul? I didn't want to think about it, and I closed my eyes and let the tears fall. Crying for her felt impossible. She was an evil monster. No one ever felt sorry for her. So that couldn't be it. At least that's what I told myself, until I stopped shaking and stood up again. The pathways of my life had doubled back on me, as if the universe was forcing me to choose them all over again. I was standing in front of the unmistakable doorway to all other doorways, to all other places and times. I didn't know if I had the strength to go any farther, and I knew I didn't have the courage to give up. I reached out and touched the carved wood of the ancient caster doorway. The Temporis Porta. Chapter 33. The Wayward's Way. I took a deep breath and tried to let the power of the Temporis Porta flow into me. I needed to feel something other than shock. but they felt like two regular wooden doors, even if they were about 1,000 years old and framed with Nyadic script, an even older, lost language. I pressed my fingers against the wood. It felt like Seraphine's blood was on my hands in this world, as my blood had been on hers in the last. It didn't matter if I had tried to stop her. She had sacrificed herself so I would have a chance to make it to the Far Keep, even if hate was her only motivation. Seraphine had still given me a shot at getting back home to the people I loved. I had to keep going. Like the officer at the gates said, there was only one way into the one place I needed to go, the way of the warrior. Maybe this was how it felt. Awful. I tried not to think about the other thing, the fact that Seraphine's soul was trapped in eternal darkness. It was hard to imagine. I took a step back from the broad wooden doors of the Temporis Porta. It was identical to the doorway I found in the Castor tunnels beneath Gatlin, the one that took me to the Far Keep for the first time, rowan wood carved into Castor circles. I placed my palms against the rough exterior of the paneling. Just like always, they gave way beneath me. I was the wayward, and they were the way. These doors would open for me in this world as they had in the other. They would show their pathway to me. I pushed harder. The doors swung open, and I stepped inside. There were so many things I didn't realize when I was alive, so many things I took for granted. My life didn't seem precious when I had one. But here, I'd fought through a mountain of bones, crossed a river, tunneled through a mountain, begged and bargained and bartered from one world to another to get myself this close to these doors and this room. Now, I just had to find the library. One page in one book. One page in the Castor Chronicles. And I can go home. The nearness of it swirled in the air around me. I had experienced this feeling only once before at the Great Barrier, another seam between worlds. Then, just like now, I had felt the power crackling in the air too, the magic. I was in a place where great things could happen and did happen. There were some rooms that could change the world. Worlds. This was one of them, with its heavy drapes and dusty portraits and dark wood and rowan doors, a place where all things were judged and punished. Seraphine had promised that Angelus would come for me, that he had practically led me here himself. There was no use trying to hide. He was probably the reason I was sentenced to die in the first place. If there was a way around him, a way to get to the library and the Castor Chronicles, I hadn't figured it out yet. I just hoped it would come to me, the way so many ideas had in the past when my future was at stake. The only question was, would he come first? I decided to take my chances and try to find the library before Angelus found me. It would have been a good plan if it had actually worked out. I had barely crossed the room when I saw them. The council keepers, the man with the hourglass, the albino woman, and Angelus appeared in front of me. Their robes fell around them, pooling at their feet, and they barely moved. I couldn't even tell if they were breathing.
Puer mortalis, isqui unus, duplex est, isqui mundo, qui fuit, finem actulit.
When one spoke, all their mouths moved like they were the same person, or at least governed by the same brain. I had almost forgotten. I didn't say anything, and I didn't move. They looked at one another and spoke again.
Mortal boy, the one who is too, he who endeth the world that was.
When you say it that way, it sounds kind of creepy. It wasn't Latin, but it was the best I could come up with. They didn't respond. I heard the murmuring of foreign voices around me and turned to see the room suddenly crowded with unfamiliar people. I looked for the telltale tattoos and gold eyes of the dark casters, but I was too disoriented to register anything beyond the three robed figures who stood in front of me.
Child of Lila Evers Waite, deceased keeper of Gatlin. The choral voices filled the great hall like some kind of trumpet.
It reminded me of beginning band with Miss Spider back at Jackson High, only less off-key. In the flesh, I shrugged. Or not.
You have taken the labyrinth and defeated the cataclyst. Many have tried. Only you have been.
There was a hitch, a pause, like the keepers didn't know what to say. I took a breath, half expecting them to say something like exterminated.
Victorious.
It was almost like they couldn't bring themselves to say the word. Not really, she kind of defeated herself. I scowled at Angelus, who was standing in the center. I wanted him to look at me. I wanted him to know that I knew what he'd done to Seraphine, how he'd chained the caster, like a dog, to a throne of bones. What kind of sick game was that? But Angelus didn't flinch. I took a step closer. Or I guess you defeated her, Angelus. At least, that's what Seraphine said, that you enjoyed torturing her. I looked around the room. Is that what keepers do around here? Because it's not what keepers do where I come from. Back home, they're good people who care about things like right and wrong and good and evil and all that. Like my mom. I looked at the crowd behind me. Seems like you guys are pretty messed up. The three spoke again in unison.
That is not our concern. Victory spolia sunt. To the victor go the spoils. The debt has been paid.
About that, if this was my way back to Gatlin, I wanted to know. Angelus raised his hand, silencing me.
In return, you have gained entry to this keep, the warrior's way. You are to be commended.
The crowd fell silent, which didn't exactly make me feel all that commended. More than anything, it felt like I was about to be sentenced. Or maybe that was how I was used to things going down in here. I looked around. It doesn't really sound like you mean it. The crowd began to whisper again. The three council keepers stared at me. At least, I think they did. It was impossible to see their eyes behind the strangely cut prism glasses, with the twisting strands of gold, silver, and copper holding them in place. I tried again. In terms of spoils, I was thinking more about going home to Gatlin. Wasn't that the deal? One of us goes to eternal darkness, and one of us gets to leave? The crowd burst into chaos. Angelus stepped forward.
Enough!
The room fell silent again. This time he spoke alone. The other keepers looked at me but said nothing.
The bargain was for the cataclyst alone. We have made no such pact with a mortal. Never would we return a mortal to existence.
I remembered Amma's past, revealed through the black stone I still had in my pocket. Sulla had warned her that Angelus hated mortals. He was never going to let me walk away. What if the mortal was never meant to be here? Angelus's eyes widened. I want my page back. This time the crowd gasped.
What is written in the chronicles is law. The pages cannot be removed, Angelus hissed.
But you can rewrite them however you want. I couldn't hide the rage in my voice. He had taken everything from me. How many other lives had he destroyed? And why? Because he couldn't be a caster?
You were the one who is too. Your fate was to be punished. You should not have brought the Lilim into matters that were not hers to resolve.
Wait, what does Lillian English, I mean, the Lilim, have to do with any of this? My English teacher, whose body had been inhabited by the most powerful creature in the demon world, had been the one who showed me what I had to do to fix the order of things. Was that why he was punishing me? Did I get in the way of whatever he was planning with Abraham, destroying the mortal race, using casters as lab rats? I always believed that when Lena and Amma brought me back from the dead with the Book of Moons, they had set something in motion that couldn't be undone. It started the unraveling that ripped the hole in the universe, which was the reason I had to write it at the water tower. What if I had it backward? What if the thing that was supposed to happen was the unraveling? What if fixing it was the crime? It was all so clear now, like everything had been lost in darkness and then the sun came out. Some moments are like that, but now I knew the truth. I was supposed to fail. The world as we knew it was supposed to end. The mortals weren't the point. They were the problem. The Lilim wasn't supposed to help me, and I wasn't supposed to jump. She was supposed to condemn me, and I was supposed to give up. Angelus had bet on the wrong team. A sound echoed through the hall as the great doors on the far side pushed open, revealing a small figure standing between them. Talk about betting on the wrong team. I wouldn't have made this bet, not in 1,000 lifetimes. It was more unexpected than Angelus or any of the keepers. He smiled broadly. At least, I think it was a smile. It was hard to tell with Xavier.
Hello?
Xavier glanced around the intimidating room, clearing his throat. He tried again.
Hello, friend.
It was so quiet, you could have heard one of his precious buttons drop. The only thing that wasn't quiet was Angelus.
How dare you show your defiled face here again, Xavier, if there is anything of Xavier left, beast.
Xavier's leathery wings shrugged. Angelus only looked angrier.
Why have you involved yourself in this? Your fate is not intertwined with the wayward. You are serving your sentence. You don't need to take a dead mortal's battles on as your own.
It is too late for that, Angelus, he said.
Why?
Because he paid his way, and I accepted the price. Because...
Xavier slowed his words as if he was letting them fall into place in his mind.
He is my friend, and I have no other.
He's not your friend,
Angelus hissed. You're too brainless to have a friend.
Brainless and heartless. All you care about are your worthless trinkets, your lost baubles.
Angelus sounded frustrated. I wondered why he cared what Xavier thought or did. What is Xavier to him? There had to be a story there, but I didn't want to know about anything that involved Angelus and his minions, or the crimes they must have committed. The Far Keep was the closest thing I'd ever found to hell in real life, at least in my real afterlife.
What you know of me, said Xavier slowly, is nothing.
His twisted face was even more expressionless than usual.
Less than I know of myself.
You are a fool, Angelus answered. That I know.
I am a friend. I have in my possession 2,000 assorted buttons, 800 keys, and only one friend. Perhaps it is not something you can understand. I have not often been one before.
He looked proud of himself.
I will be one now.
I was proud of him, too. Angelus scoffed.
You will sacrifice your soul for a friend.
Is a friend different from a soul, Angelus?
The council keeper said nothing. Xavier cocked his head again.
Would you know if it were?
Angelus didn't respond, but he didn't need to. We all knew the answer.
What are you doing here, then, Mortali Comes?
Angelus took a step toward Xavier, and Xavier took a step back.
Friend of the mortal,
Angelus snarled. I resisted the urge to insert myself between them, hoping that Xavier, for both our sakes, didn't try to run away.
You seek to destroy the mortal, do you not?
Xavier swallowed.
I do, Angelus answered.
You seek to end the mortal race.
It wasn't a question.
Of course, like any infestation, the ultimate goal is annihilation.
Even though I was expecting it, Angelus's answer caught me off guard. You... what? Xavier looked at me like he was trying to shut me down.
It is no secret. The mortals are an irritant to the supernatural races. This is not a new concept. I wish it was.
I knew Abraham wanted to wipe out the mortal race. If Angelus was working with him, their goals were aligned.
You seek entertainment?
Xavier watched Angelus. Angelus looked at Xavier's leathery wings, disgusted.
I seek solutions.
To the mortal condition?
Angelus smiled, dark and joyless.
As I said, the mortal infestation.
I felt sick, but Xavier only sighed.
As you wish to call it, I propose a challenge.
A what? I didn't like the sound of it.
A challenge.
Angelus looked suspicious. The mortal defeated the Dark Queen and won. That was the only challenge he will face today. I was annoyed. I told you I didn't kill Seraphine. She defeated herself.
Semantics, Angelus said.
Xavier silenced us both.
So, you are unwilling to face the mortal in a challenge?
There was an uproar in the crowd, and Angelus looked like he wanted to tear Xavier's wings off.
Silence!
The chatter stopped immediately.
I do not fear any mortal.
Then this is my proposition.
Xavier tried to keep his voice steady, but he was obviously terrified.
The mortal will face you in the Great Keep and attempt to regain his page. You will attempt to stop him. If he succeeds, you will allow him to do with it as he likes. If you stop him from reaching his page, he will allow you to do with it as you like.
What? Xavier was suggesting that I face off against Angelus. My odds were not good in this scenario. Angelus was aware that all eyes were on him as the crowd and the other council keepers waited for his response.
Interesting.
I wanted to bolt out of the room. Not interesting? I don't even know what you're talking about. Angelus leaned toward me, his eyes sparking.
Let me explain it to you. A lifetime of servitude or the simple destruction of your soul. It doesn't really matter to me. I'll decide on a whim, as I like, when I like.
I'm not sure about this. It sounded like a lose-lose proposition to me. Xavier let one hand fall on my shoulder.
You don't have a choice. It's the only chance you have to get home to the girl with the curls.
He turned to Angelus, holding out his hand.
Is it a deal?
Angelus stared at Xavier's hand as if it was infected.
I accept.
Chapter 34. The Castor Chronicles. Angelus swept out of the room, the other keepers right behind him. I let out the breath I was holding.
Where are they going?
They have to give you a chance, or they will be perceived as unjust.
Perceived as unjust? Was he serious? Are you saying no one's caught on to that before?
The council is feared.
No one questions them, Xavier said, but they are also proud, especially Angelus. He wishes his followers to believe he is giving you a chance. But he's not? That depends on you now.
Xavier turned to me with something resembling a sad expression on what was left of his human face.
I can't help you. Not beyond this, my friend.
What are you talking about?
I'm not going back there. I can't, he said. Not to the Chamber of the Chronicles.
Of course, the room that housed the book. It had to be close. I looked at the row of doors beyond us, bordering one side of the room. I wondered which one led to the end of my journey, or to the death of my soul. You can't go back there, and I can? Don't chicken out on me now. I lowered my voice. You just took on Angelus. You made a deal with the devil. You're my hero.
I am no hero. As I said, I am your friend.
Xavier couldn't do it. Who could blame the guy? The Chamber of the Chronicles must have been some kind of house of horrors for him, and he had put himself in enough danger already. Thanks, Xavier. You're a great friend. One of the best. I smiled at him. The look he gave me in return was sobering.
This is your journey, dead man, yours alone. I can go no farther.
He put his arm on my shoulder, pressing heavily. Why do I have to do everything alone? As soon as I said it, I knew it wasn't true. The greats had sent me on my way. Aunt Prue made sure I got a second chance. Obadiah told me everything I needed to know. My mom gave me the strength to do it. Amma watched for me and believed it when she found me. Lena sent me the Book of Moons against all odds and all the way from the other side of the universe. Aunt Marion and Macon, Link and John and Liv, they were there for Lena when I couldn't be. Even the River Master and Xavier had helped me move forward when all along it would have been so much easier to give up and go back. I had never been alone. Not for a minute. I may have been a wayward, but my way was full of people who loved me. They were the only way I knew. I could do this. I had to. I understand, I said. Thanks, Xavier, for everything. He nodded.
I will meet you again, Ethan. I will see you when next you cross the river.
I hope it's not for a long time.
I hope this as well, my friend. For you more than me.
His eyes seemed to twinkle for a second.
But I will keep busy collecting and counting until you return.
I didn't say anything as he slipped through the shadows and back into the world where nothing ever happened, and the days became the same as nights. I hoped he would remember me. I was pretty sure he wouldn't. One by one, I touched the row of doors in front of me with my hand. Some felt as cold as ice, some felt like nothing, like plain wood. There was only one that pulsed beneath my fingertips. Only one burned at my touch. I knew it was the right door before I saw the telltale caster circles carved into the rowan wood, just like the temporis porta. This was the doorway to the heart of the Great Keep. The one place any son of Lila Jane Evers Waite would instinctively find his way, whether or not he was a wayward. The library. Pushing my way through the massive doors directly across from the temporis porta, I knew it was time to face the most dangerous part of my journey. Angelus would be waiting. The doors were just the beginning. The moment I stepped into the inner chamber, I found myself standing in an almost entirely reflective room. If it was supposed to be a library, it was the strangest one I'd ever seen. The crumbling stones beneath my feet, the stubbled cave walls, the ceiling and floor that grew into stalactites and stalagmites as the room circled back upon itself, they all seemed to be made of some kind of transparent gemstone, cut into a thousand impossible facets that reflected the light in every direction. It looked like I was standing in one of the 11 jewelry boxes in Xavier's collection. Except less claustrophobic. A small opening in the ceiling let in enough natural light to catch the whole room in a dizzying glow. The effect reminded me of the tidal cave where we'd first met Abraham Ravenwood on the night of Lena's 17th moon. In the center of this room, there was a pond of water the size of a swimming pool. The body of milky white water churned as if there was a fire beneath it. It was the color of Seraphine's sightless, opaque eyes before she died. I shuddered. I couldn't think about her, not now. I had to focus on surviving Angelus, defeating him. I took a deep breath and tried to get my bearings. What was I dealing with? My eyes fixed on the bubbling white liquid. In the center of the pool, a small stretch of earth rose above the water like a tiny island. In the center of the island was a pedestal. On the pedestal was a book surrounded by candles that flickered with strange green and gold flames. The book. I didn't need someone to tell me which book it was or what it was doing here. The reason there was an entire library devoted to only one book, and with a moat around it. I knew exactly why it was here, and why I was. It was the only part of this whole journey I understood, the only thing that was perfectly clear from the moment Obadiah's Trueblood told me the truth about what had happened to me. It was the Castor Chronicles. And I was here to destroy my page, the one that killed me, and I had to do it before Angelus could stop me. After all I'd learned about being a wayward and finding my way, this was where it led. There was no way left to go, no more path to find. I was at the end, and all I wanted was to go back. But first, I had to get to that island, to the pedestal and the Castor Chronicles. I had to do what I'd come here to do. A shout from across the room startled me. Mortal boy, if you leave now, I will leave you your soul. How's that for a challenge? Angelus appeared on the other side of the pool. I wondered how he got over there, and I wished there were as many ways to leave this room as there were to enter it. Or at least, as many ways home. My soul? No, you won't. I stood at the edge of the pool and chucked a rock into the bubbling water, watching it disappear. I wasn't stupid. He would never let me go. I would end up like Xavier or Seraphine, black wings or white eyes. It didn't make a difference. In the end, we were all bound in his chains, whether you could see them or not. Angelus smiled. No, I suppose that's true. He gestured with his hand, and at least a dozen rocks rose into the air around him. They fired themselves at me, one after another, hitting with uncanny accuracy. I flung my arms across my face as a rock sailed past. Very mature. What are you going to do now? Tie me up and stick me in your old boneyard? Blind and chained like an animal? Don't flatter yourself. I don't want a mortal pet. He twisted his finger, and the water began to spin into a kind of whirlpool. I'll just destroy you. It's easier for all of us, though not much of a challenge. Why did you torture Seraphine? She wasn't immortal. Why bother? I shouted. I had to know. It felt like our fates were tied together somehow. Mine, Seraphine, Xavier's, and those of all the other mortals and casters Angelus had destroyed. What were we to him?
Seraphine? Was that her name? I had almost forgotten.
Angelus laughed.
Do you expect me to concern myself with every dark caster who ends up here?
The water churned violently now. I knelt and touched it with one hand. It was freezing cold and sort of slimy. I didn't want to swim through it, but I couldn't tell if there was another way across. I looked up at Angelus. I didn't know how this whole challenge thing was going to take shape, but I thought it was better to keep him talking until I figured it out.
Do you blind every dark caster and make them fight to the death?
I looked back at the water. It rippled where I had touched it, turning clear and calm. Angelus folded his arms, smiling. I kept my hand in the water as the transparent current spread across the pool, though my hand was going numb. Now I could see what was really beneath the milky surface. Corpses, just like the ones in the river. Floating upward, their green hair and blue lips looked like masks on their bloated, dead bodies. Like me, I thought. That's what I look like right now, somewhere where I still had a body. I heard Angelus laughing, but I could barely hear, barely think. I wanted to vomit. I backed away from the water. I knew he was trying to frighten me, and I resolved not to look at it again. Keep your mind on Lena. Get to the page, and you can go home. Angelus watched me, laughing harder. He called to me as if I was a child.
Don't be afraid. Your final death doesn't have to happen like this. Seraphine failed to achieve the tasks entrusted to her.
So you do know her name? I cracked a smile. He glared.
I know she failed me.
You and Abraham?
Angelus stiffened. Congratulations. I see you've been digging around in matters that are none of your concern, which means you're no smarter than the first Ethan Waite who visited the Great Keep, and no more likely to see the Duquesne caster you love than he was.
My whole body went numb. Of course, Ethan Carter Waite had been here, Genevieve told me. I didn't want to ask, but I had to. What did you do to him?
What do you think?
A sadistic smile spread across Angelus's face.
He tried to take something that did not belong to him.
His page? With every question, the keeper looked more satisfied. I could tell he was enjoying this.
No, Genevieve's, the Duquesne girl he loved. He wanted to lift the curse she brought upon herself and the Duquesne children who would come after her. Instead, he lost his foolish soul.
Angelus looked down into the churning water. He nodded and a single corpse rose to the surface. Empty eyes that looked too much like my own stared back at me.
Look familiar, mortal.
I knew that face. I would have known it anywhere. It was mine, or actually, his. Ethan Carter Waite was still wearing the Confederate uniform he died in. My heart dropped. Genevieve would never see him again, not in this world or any other. He had died twice, like me. But he would never get back home, never hold Genevieve in his arms, even in the other world. He had tried to save the girl he loved, and Seraphine and Ridley and Lena and all the other casters who would come after her in the Duquesne family. He'd failed. It didn't make a guy feel better, not about standing where I stood, and not about leaving a caster girl behind the way we both had.
You will fail as well.
The words echoed across the cavern, which meant Angelus was reading my mind. At this point, it was the least surprising thing happening in the room. I knew what I had to do. I emptied my mind the best I could, picturing the old baseball diamond where Link and I used to play t-ball. I watched Link throw a bum pitch in the 9th inning as I stood on home plate punching my glove. I tried to picture the batter. Who was it? Earl Petty chewing gum since the coach had outlawed chaw? I struggled to keep my mind on the game while my eyes did something else. Come on, Earl. Knock it out of the park. I glanced at the pedestal, then at the corpses floating at my feet. More bodies continued to rise, bumping into one another like sardines packed in a can. It wouldn't be long until they were so close that I wouldn't even be able to see the water.